Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way through nature's chain as I tune my body and my brain to the music of the land. Inch by inch.
All right, we have here in the studio Marion Owen, Master Gardener. Hi, Marion.
Good morning, Pam.
How are you?
I'm ready to grow.
You're ready to grow.
We're growing.
Okay, well, growing is good. The doctor is in, and we're here to field your questions and give them to Marion and hopefully get some gardening answers this morning.
Fielding questions, Pam.
I know.
Okay, that was good.
That was pun-tentional.
Okay, all right. We'll weed out the questions.
Oh, good one. Yeah, okay. All right. I can see how this show's going to go. Okay. So, Marion, why don't you give us a little bit of your background first and just talk a little bit about how you got into gardening and what you do as a gardener.
Well, I really started tiny little steps when I was growing up. My only gardening experience in Washington State was tapping snow off the bamboo. That's it.
Bamboo?
Yeah. And
you had bamboo? And
debudding rhododendrons. That's it.
Yeah.
So I go to sea for a living, and I'm working on the tugboats that bring fuel into Kodiak, and I'm standing on the railing, and I go, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. So I think, what do I want to do? And you know what pops in my head is photography and gardening.
That's weird.
I knew nothing about...
Maybe it was because you were at this barren at sea, not that the sea is barren, but you know what I mean? You were on these ships or something.
Yeah, as far away from gardening as you could get.
Right. I mean, were you missing your greens or
something?
Blue
ocean, not green. I don't know, Pam. It just, you know how those little intuitive hits just kind of pop in your head?
Sometimes.
So that's what I did.
I
said, well, if I'm going to grow something, I need dirt. You don't have much dirt around here. So then I said, compost maybe? This is pre-internet, so I went to the library, and I started researching making dirt compost, and I made compost, and I was just ecstatic.
Was there you've been here since the late 80s?
No, actually, I started coming here in the late 70s, so I moved here in 84.
84, okay.
Right.
So was the Cooperative Extension Office here then?
Was there
an officer here?
There was an office here and a presence, and the garden club, but... People mostly grew flowers.
Yeah.
So there was this era of not many people grew veggies. But if you look at old photos of Kodiak, you know, there are fenced yards and there are serious gardens going on.
Oh, well, I mean, Potato Patch Lake.
Potato Patch Lake, hello.
Was named exactly because there was a potato patch there. So,
right.
Yeah. Ivor Milutin used to tell some great stories about gardening vegetables and things like that.
And
so.
you kind of had to.
Yeah.
You really did.
You didn't have a choice.
No. So I thought I wanted to grow something. That's what I did.
Cool.
I just got into the trenches, got dirt under my nails. That's the only way to do it, right?
So composting was one of your first tasks. How did that first composting adventure go? Because I know that is a challenge for many of us here. We've had that conversation here in the station the last few days.
Yeah.
And I've seen it pop up on some of the things that we've been asking people. What are your problems with gardening here in Kodiak? So tell us about composting.
Well, composting worldwide is considered the end be-all solution to gardening, to soil. And even the New York Times columnist said that. Yes, there is an all-purpose fertilizer, and it's called compost.
Oh.
Sure, it's a challenge here. And you think, well, I don't live in New Mexico. It's not warm enough. But it is, because the heat is coming from within. So if you mix your ingredients, say, equal parts green, like grass clippings, and equal parts leaves, and add some manure, just mix it all together like a cake. Add water and stir every 3 or 4 days. Keep it covered, and you've got compost. And you think, well, do I buy these little fancy barrels like you see in the store?
Right, right. The turn barrels.
Yeah. It's not enough surface area for our cool climate. However, you can do just fine making compost and think in terms of 3 by 3 by 3.
Okay. A cube.
3 feet. Yeah, a cube, like a square yard. Is that a square yard? meter.
Three. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's the size you need, and you build it all at once. You don't just add a little bit here, a little bit there over a six-month period. You need to build it all at once, fill her up. So go on a treasure hunt. We have in Kodiak an amazing arrangement of materials for composting. You've got leaves. You've got kelp. You've got old manure from the barns. You've got grass clippings, kitchen scraps. You don't have to put anything in there that's going to attract bears either. Mm-hmm. I mean, bears aren't going to eat leaves and kelp.
Right, right.
So you put it all together, make sure it's kind of moist, like a damp sponge, and then I will guarantee that in about 5 days, that temperature is going to climb, sometimes up to over 100 degrees.
What's the optimum temperature?
Temperature. The optimum temperature is somewhere between 100 and 140.
Oh, okay.
If you start peaking at 140, and you might have to add a little fishbone meal or something, what that does for you is it kills a lot of weed seeds.
Ah.
So if you're concerned about throwing in, oh, dang, like horse manure. So mm-hmm. horse manure, because, you know, God bless horses, but they only have one gut. They only have one stomach.
So versus, they don't process it.
So they don't process it. Mm-hmm. I mean, no weed seed's going to live through four stomachs like you have on a ruminant, like a cow.
Yeah.
So so here's a kind of a funny thing. So when we have our B&B guests, mm-hmm. and I know they're going out the road, I just feel out the situation, and I'll ask them, I say, would you mind if I gave you a 5-gallon bucket, you could pick up a little buffalo poo for me? And some are into it, and I love it. I give them gloves and a bucket, and
here you go.
Yeah, we'll reduce your rent. But
so buffalo poo and cow chips are good things for your compost pile.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yep. Good stuff.
And then it should be done in, you know, like 4 to 6 weeks.
So you can, all right, so it's cooked for a while. It's had a consistent temperature of somewhere between 100 and 140.
Mm-hmm.
Then how soon can you use it? Once it hits 100 degrees, can you use it right away if it's a brand new pile of compost?
Well, it's a good question, because what will happen is it'll get hot,
mm-hmm.
and then you turn it, it'll cool back down again. Okay. And then it'll come back, or maybe over to 100, then you turn it, and about every 5 days or a week, it'll go back down. And so it'll be like a sine wave. It'll just kind of, and then it'll cool off. It'll actually reduce to about half.
Okay.
And that's all the breaking down that goes on. And then after a while, it won't heat up anymore. And that's okay. It's not like it's dead. It's just going into a little bit of finishing.
Okay.
And then you can sift it and use it.
Okay.
And get another pile started.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, is it like sourdough starter? You leave a little there to add fresh material to? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You feed it?
You inoculate it, right?
Yes, okay.
And to a degree, yes, because you've got the bacteria and the fungus in there. Mostly bacteria. They're doing all the work while you sleep. Okay. Love those guys. Okay. And there you have the basic material to enhance our local soil, which is pretty sticky and dense and doesn't have a whole lot of nutrients in it.
And clay-like in some places. And
clay-like, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So compost is the trick.
Compost is the trick. But let's pretend that, bam, you want a garden this year.
Right.
And you are building a box.
Okay.
You're going to get lumber from the sawmill, 2x12s. You're going to put them together, you know, say 4x8. And you go, now what? I don't have any dirt. I don't have any compost.
Right.
So the quick and dirty way to do it is you just nearly fill that box. Like think of a cake pan.
Okay.
With chunky stuff. It can be old manure. It can be kelp, or maybe a little bit of sawdust or old leaves, or just fill it nearly to the top. And then you can top off with, if you have to buy potting soil, or maybe, you know, just some finer stuff, or maybe a friend has a little bit, and then just top off the last 3 inches.
What's
if
that?
You're just growing veggies, it's okay. It'll break down over the summer, but you got to start. All those worms are going to get in there, and the bacteria, it'll do all the work for you.
Okay.
You don't have to fill the box with this perfect stuff.
Okay. So you fill it up with organic material.
Organic material.
Almost full. And mm-hmm. then top it off with people can't see that. So you're saying like 3 to 4 inches.
Yeah, 3 to 4 inches of
good garden topsoil.
Yeah, that's a little finer.
Sifted soil.
That's it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there you have it. You can still have vegetables this summer. You know, as long as we're talking about that, some of us have really small yards or only decks. Mm-hmm. And what about trying to do a little even smaller container? Same principle apply. You could take like a half barrel and grow carrots in it, or you could take what?
You could take a halibut tub.
A halibut tub.
Right.
And you fill the same thing. You fill it with organic material and then top it off with a little soil and
yep.
Grow. Same kind of thing.
And just understand, though, that if you have a container, it'll tend to be a little denser. The competition for root growth is a little more intense because they just can't spread out.
Right.
So plants that do really well in containers would be lettuce, mm-hmm. kale. You can grow up and stake some peas going up. You can do herbs or parsley, or you can do a lot in a halibut tub and just make sure it's got drainage holes and away you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you just drill a hole in the periodically in the bottom and along the sides and
yep, in the bottom and you know, just even in the sides, even maybe the first 6 inches from the bottom,
mm-hmm.
just for aeration.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right. So if you have questions for Marion and you have not emailed or sent them to us somehow, you can give us a call at 486-3181. We're going to be here for the next 45 minutes or so answering your questions about gardening. So one of the questions that we got, somebody called in with this yesterday. They were talking about battling moss without using something toxic. And he was actually talking about, this guy lived in the Menasha Bay area, which moss is an issue definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
But he was actually talking about moss in his lawn.
Mm-hmm.
We know we all battle moss on our roof tops. Mm-hmm. Most of us do. So what could you use on your lawn that's not a toxic thing and battle the moss? Or do you?
That's a very good question because you're going to have moss in certain conditions that do exist in Menasha, in a lot of areas around here. And one is, of course, shade or partial shade.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is a lot of moisture. And then acidic soil.
Hmm. Ash.
Our classic butter clay kind of dense soil.
Huh.
Right, which is layers of volcanic ash and some...
And there's a lot of that in Menasha.
Yeah. So part of that is a mindset. Do you really want to be able to mow a lawn? Is there something wrong with having moss in your lawn? It is an indicator that you have all those conditions. But if you really, really, really want to have a lawn, it's going to be some work. You're going to have to sweeten your soil, as in add compost or some sort of lime or dolomite lime. And you're going to have to dig it up and improve the moisture drainage and all of that. So if you want to commit to it, you can do it. But if you live in that space, it's going to just come back. It's like cutting your hair.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to cut your hair, it's going to grow back.
So we should just be thankful moss is green?
Moss is green year-round. And, you know, it's like visitors that come from, say, Germany, and it's in the middle of winter here or something, and they go, you guys just don't know how lucky you are to see all this wonderful green
mm-hmm.
moss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go hiking in Abercrombie, and they go, this is fabulous. And then maybe a homeowner might go, no, this is awful.
Right, right, because we have to battle it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to battle it. You're saying
you pick your battles.
You just decide, you know what? The lawn and the moss are not going to be my battle.
And you will have those coming together because mm-hmm. the moss is going to take advantage of a good growing space, right?
And so, all right. Well, unless you want to dig up your entire lawn and work with the soil to start with, it sounds like maybe just live with the moss.
Live with the moss. Now, this is a good segue to, well, what is good lawn treatment here?
Yes. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that because were having a conversation about that a while back.
And I learned this from a friend of ours who lives in Aberdeen, Washington, which is on the coast, and it's damp, and it's coolish, too. He's surrounded by trees. But what he does for a lawn treatment in the spring is he'll spread, like feeding chickens or, you know, shaken out or whatever. He'll put about an inch, all cover his lawn with about an inch of, you know, good soil or compost or a mix or something that's going to add nutrients. He says the lawn looks horrible for about a week or 10 days. And then magically all that green starts poking through. So you're doing two things. You're feeding the green stuff on the top, but we never think about that root. I mean, grass.
It's matted.
It's just
real.
A plant.
Yeah.
It's just a plant. Lots of plants together. And so what it does is it helps the roots have something to reach for. So you don't have, you're right, you don't have that solid mat. And that helps improve your lawn, again, while you're sleeping. You don't have to use chemicals and worry about your grandkids running on the lawn or the birds picking up the little pellets of fertilizer or anything like that. It's just spread all over your lawn. It rains, it gets it in there, and you've got the greenest lawn, the most beautiful lawn, and the roots can go down, and your lawn will survive our winter rains and drought and all of that much better. Much
so
better.
Do you recommend before you spray that or spread the compost or whatever organic material you're going to put on your lawn, do you recommend you go through it and rake it real well first, or do you just put it on there?
You just put it on there.
And are we too late to do that this summer?
You're not too late at all.
Okay.
You could do that from now till, say, mid-June.
Okay.
You know, you could even mow your lawn and do it anytime.
Okay.
Anytime. Matter of fact, do it in the fall, too. Do it in late August, and then you're kind of helping it get through the winter.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question because I saw a conversation you were having with someone about a weird thing that you put on your lawn this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit because that was very unusual. And basically, you had some sort of dried molasses.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, let's talk about this. Why did you put that on your lawn, and what exactly was it? Where did you get it? And does it seem to be helping?
Well, I learned about this method through Jeff Lowenfels.
Okay.
Who's the garden writer for the Dispatch, ADN. And by the way, Jeff has the longest running gardening column in the United States.
Wow.
Our writer here in Anchorage, Alaska, right? I don't know, 45 years, something amazing. And so he wrote about how to really nourish your lawn and get the bacteria going and get that. It's really all about the soil microbes. And so here's a little connection here, Pam. We humans are learning about the biome of our gut and how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing
for
with
plant.
The dirt, the underground stuff. We're just barely scratching the surface about how important soil is and that whole community down there.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what Jeff says. He applies soybean meal, which is great for nutrients and quote unquote proteins, nitrogen, and molasses, dried molasses. And you go, well, where the heck? This is the same stuff you would feed cattle. It's
interesting.
It's, yeah. And so it gets all that stuff going. And actually, we bought it at the time. It was through Alaska Mill and Feed. And they mailed it to us, USPS, in big sacks. They mailed it. And so we just use a little spreader. And then
like a grass seed spreader.
Yeah, and we just applied it, and it rained and rained. It's amazing.
So one has to think, are you attracting weird things to your lawn? You know, I mean, molasses is pretty sweet. Once it rains, does it get sticky?
No,
it just went right down into
the lawn. It just went right down into the base of the little plants, and it just dissolved.
This is mixed molasses and soybean protein?
Meal, right.
Okay.
Soybean meal.
Meal.
Okay. Almost like a flour, but not quite.
Right.
And then we just mix it in, you know, and then you can put your compost on top of that or, yeah. So you're just taking care of it. And we get a lot of traffic on our lawn. So.
Yeah, you do. And your lawn is interesting, too, because you have, other than grass, you have flowers in your lawn.
Oh,
which,
yeah, I do.
Kind of fun to come up and see.
Little crocuses in the lawn.
Yeah.
Plant those in the fall, and then you got flowers popping up. And then when you need to mow, they're done.
They're all done by the time you're ready to mow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea. So if you'd like a little color in your lawn in the spring, plant some bulbs this fall.
Plant crocus bulbs. And give the bumblebees something to feed on when they first come out in the spring.
Yeah, or photograph.
Oh, yeah.
You can photograph the bees.
They're so fun.
So...
You have more questions.
Oh, I have a page full of questions. So let's go to the next question. How do I prevent an invasive plant like mint from taking over my garden?
The only way you can say no to mint, no, is you have to keep it contained. You have to keep it in a container. You put it in a raised bed, it'll just look at that and say, oh, cool, mine.
Yeah.
It's all mine. If it's in your lawn, now I read this article once, this gardener in the UK, and he was mowing his lawn. And he thought, just for a microsecond, he's thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I just put a bunch of mint in my lawn? And then every time I mowed the lawn, I'd have this wonderful smell.
Mm.
And then he said, I am crazy because it's going to be in all of my landscape beds.
Yeah.
It'll be everywhere, and you'll never get rid of it because it travels underground with a little rhizome, and then it sends out roots, and you got more. Yeah. You have to keep mint contained.
Get a big barrel.
All mint.
Get all of it. Spearmint, peppermint, doesn't matter.
All of it. And it's a survival thing. It's that's their survival mode is spread, spread, spread.
Yeah. It's kind of like I have, they're a weird geranium that grow very well here. It's like a ground cover,
mm-hmm.
And has just a long stem and then a little flower that comes up. But they, rhizomes also, and they survive, I swear they would survive, well, I don't know, but they just go everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if I made the mistake once of putting them in a bed that did not have any kind of container, and they just went, phew.
No boundaries. Well, you know, you got to teach plants little boundary issues, yeah.
All right. So mints have to be in a container if you don't want them to take over.
Right.
Okay, here's our next question. I haven't started my seeds yet. When is the best time to sow directly into the soil? Is that only possible with a hoop house or covered bed?
It's not limited to covered beds for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to wait a little while longer.
So how warm should the soil be?
So your early 40s-ish, yeah.
Air temperature or soil temp?
So, well, air temp, and that'll be
about the
soil
same.
Temp. So plants you could sow now would be, I would try turnips, mustard greens, like those salad mixes you get in the store in bags. It's a little early for carrots. They like it just a little warmer. Now, I'm talking if you don't cover your beds at all.
Okay.
Even lettuce seeds, radishes would be another good one.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You will know what comes up first and what doesn't. And if only one or two of the plants you sow come up, it's still in the positive. You learn something.
You have a couple of plants.
Right. But and the other thing, too, is it's possible and fairly simple to put a few PVC pipes bent into your ground and then just cover it with something on heavy rains, you know, that kind of thing.
Say that again?
It's pretty easy to add a little bit of protection over your raised beds.
Oh, okay. So to use the PVC pipes as for the hoops.
Like 3/4 inch.
Sorry. I lost track of where you were there.
And just put some plastic over it just to protect them from heavy rains.
Okay.
It could even be black plastic just to keep it from getting pelted.
I even had one year, all I had to plant was a barrel, a half barrel, and I threw carrot seeds in and maybe a few lettuce seeds in this half barrel, and I covered it up with just basic plastic. So it was flat. When it rained, it puddled, it did everything. That was the best batch of carrots I'd ever grown here, ever.
So what do you think? What do we think was
I think it was just the perfect temperature with that bisqueen on the top. Oh, is this Mike Wall with a question?
Oh. Mikey.
Hi.
Oh, ooh, all right, yep.
Mike questions, and I know these come from his own yard.
Oh.
So anyway, I think it was just because the temperature was just right and that Visqueen was just exactly what I needed for that particular year.
And you warm the soil and
right, carrot. Right.
So, you know, later in the month is a good time for carrots.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I may try it again this year. We'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll see. All right. I'm going to go to another question that came in, and then we'll ask Mike's questions here in a minute, too. I love cilantro, and I think this is one actually that was on one of your web questions. I love cilantro. However, it usually bolts before the leaves get big. I even had it outside last year, but with the weather, it didn't do so well. Have you been successful in growing cilantro in Kodiak? And do you have to harvest the whole thing, or can you trim it like most herbs? You know, most parsley, you can trim and it'll grow some more whatever, right?
Right.
So, the cilantro question.
Cilantro question. Yep, cilantro grows like a weed down in the Southwest. That's true. You can grow it outside here, uncovered, but I try and keep my cilantro plants out of the nor'easters.
Ah.
You know, driving rain is not their friend. They go, this is just not a cozy place to grow. And waterlogged soil. So I just kind of bring them around the other side. They can get afternoon sun. Cilantro will bolt wherever you grow it. It has this survival mode of, okay, I'm going to put out all I have for 2 or 3 weeks, and then I'm done. I'm going to send up flowers, and it's time to start a new one. So can you pinch it? Not really. It's not like basil where you pinch off all the little tops and you get more leaves. It doesn't work like that. So I suggest that plant cilantro about every 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh.
Just sow another little mini batch. Because it's gonna bolt like spinach. It's gonna bolt and be gone. You will, if you want, you let the plant go ahead and grow, and you'll get seeds on the top, coriander seeds, right?
So you can save those and
save
use them
those
again.
And the flowers, the umbel flowers, are beautiful, and you'll still get some leaves on the bottom going up the stem. And sometimes I do that. I go, dang, I forgot to plant more cilantro. Oh, but this plant, it might be 2 feet tall and bolting, but I still have little leaves I can use.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. There's the cilantro question. Let's do one more. This is kind of along the same vein. Herbs. I have a terrible time with herbs. I can't get my basil to grow very big. Where's the best place to grow it? Inside, outside, greenhouse? How do you grow basil in Kodiak?
Not outside.
I agree.
Right. It'll just sort of turn brown and black and say, I am out of here.
It's kind of a fickle little herb.
It's a little fickle. It's so loved because it has so much oil in it, and it's a very delicate kind of plant. Yeah, so indoors in your windowsill, in a greenhouse or a hoop house, covered bed maybe, but it can get cool, so it just needs a little more TLC. That's all.
What about we used to call them cold boxes. I don't know what you call them.
Cold frames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you build a frame, and it's not, you don't have earth in there. It's like you have potted plants inside there, and it usually has a glass cover on it. We used to use old window frames, you know.
Yeah, and you lift them up
panes.
On a hinge. And,
right.
Or prop it up on a hot day.
So is that an appropriate way to grow herbs here? Would that be successful, or would it get too cool in there, do you think?
It might even get too hot.
If you didn't pop it up.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's like your car in the parking lot in Safeway on a sunny day. Whew,
right.
It's hot.
So you have
warm.
To really pay attention.
You have to pay attention. Okay. And the modern form, so to speak, of those cold frames are those mini hoops over raised beds right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you open them up and you close them and, yeah.
Okay. And it's easier to deal with that plastic than it is sometimes with the old glass frames.
A little bit. And there is... You know, let's say, okay, you leave for work at 9 and you come back at 5 and you go, oops, I forgot to open up the plastic on my raised beds and everything is now wilted and cooked and poached. Well, there are plastics you can get that have perforations so that you can put that plastic over it and you don't have to worry about it overheating.
Huh.
You get air circulation, you get moisture that comes through, and it's all fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to remove it every day.
No.
All right. That would be good for someone like me. All right, we're going to go to one of Mike's questions. How do you kill invasive buttercups?
Oh, one buttercup at a time. Boy, talk about survival mode. It's like hawkweed. You know, they can progress in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And buttercups are, they're tough because they interweave their roots and you get this mat, this impermeable mat. You can use chemicals if you want, or you just have to dig them up. And it's kind of like hawkweed, you know, buttercup, same thing. You don't just wake up and your whole lawn is covered with it or your whole yard. It started with one and or two or three. So that's when you need to nip it in the bud. It's like cancer. You get screened for cancer, so it's a preventive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Breast cancer. It's just get checked every year, right? So, but if you have a mat of it, you're going to have to either dig it up or you're going to have to poison it. And I say poison it because there are ways to do it. You follow the label. The label is the law. And it's really important to do that. Not more is better.
Right.
If you have any questions about that, talk to Blythe Brown at the Soil and Water Conservation District. And even Jeff Lowenfels, who is a born-again organic gardener, he came to Kodiak once and talked about, he answered the question about hawkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, well, you know, I have a whole yard, a whole lawn of hawkweed. What do I do? He says, you know what? I would just apply the chemicals and start over. And this is coming from Jeff.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised.
Yeah, because there's really no other way to battle it.
Not unless you want to hire, you know, 1,000 high school kids and feed them all pizza and say, here's a trowel and get it all up. Right.
But even then, I mean, even then, trying to dig up buttercups, like you said, it's almost
tough.
Like a rhizome type plant.
It
where
is.
It's everywhere.
It is. And they fan out. And you pull it up and it doesn't want to come up. And
right.
They're made for that. It's a
so
whole survival
the chemical
thing.
Solution may be the only thing you can do. Is that you or me?
Stand by. I'll just turn it off.
So go for the chemical solution with buttercups.
Yeah.
If you don't catch it right off the bat, the
right.
minute you see a buttercup in your lawn or a hawkweed.
Dig it up.
In your lawn. And I'm looking around here and we've got a hawkweed problem again this year here, I've noticed.
And the other thing, too, is talk to your neighbors.
Yeah.
So if your neighbor has hawkweed, I mean, plants don't understand fences. And so you need to talk to your neighbor.
Yep.
There are laws in the United States. A lot of states have laws where, Pam, if you have a hawkweed lawn and your hawkweed comes into my lawn, by golly, it's your responsibility.
To get rid of it.
Yep.
We don't have that law here, but it is kind of the nice, kindly neighbor sort of thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll go back to some of the questions we had earlier. This one's on cucumbers. My cucumbers get yellow leaves when I'm growing them from seed. This has been a recurring problem for 3 years. What am I doing wrong?
Cucumbers are, they can be a little touchy. Starting from seed, so you want them in a warm area. They like warm feet. A warm area, well-draining, good soil, and not over water.
Hmm.
So it's not just a lack of nitrogen where you might have yellowing leaves. Overwatering, where the water is pooling in the roots,
mm-hmm.
can cause the same problem. But if it's starving for food after a while, then that's an indication. But I have not, my cucumber seedlings are about 2 inches tall now,
mm-hmm.
and they are green. But I know if I start overwatering, then they're going to start, bad drainage, they're going to start turning yellow. And also, when I transplant my cucumbers into my hoop house, I put them in the warmest spot because they like warmth. They just do.
So how do you deal with that drainage issue in the hoop house? I mean, you're in a
effectively a raised bed in the hoop house, right?
Right. It's a raised bed, but it's drainage. Okay, I mean, it goes down into the ground.
Right, so you have it going right down into the ground. Okay.
But as far as the ceilings go, you need to make sure that there's the containers have holes in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you should after a while feed or water the plant from the bottom of the tray so it can suck it up.
Okay.
But too much, and they're going to go, and the roots, if you slip that cucumber seedling gently out of the little six pack or whatever you're growing it in, yogurt container, see what the roots look like. If they're brown, then they're rotting. If they're white, they're okay.
Huh.
You can also over fertilize. So if you're pumping Miracle Grow and stuff on those seedlings, that's like trying to feed a 1-year old a big giant steak.
Okay.
They're not ready for that.
They need the Miracle Grow
or
fertilizer
not.
Later.
Later. Maybe. Later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just let them go, make sure they're well-drained, and pull one seedling and see how the roots look.
Right.
Okay.
Now, one more trick, though, for cucumbers is that when you put them in the greenhouse or the hoop house or whatever house, I take, to warm the soil, I bury in the soil about 4 inches down Christmas tree rope lights.
Oh, I've seen that in your greenhouse.
The non-LED, because LED light doesn't put out any heat. You want the old-fashioned incandescent ones. And I put on one side of the roots, of the seedlings, and on the other side. And that just provides a little bit of warmth on days like we've just had. And they're happy.
Interesting.
They're happy. Yeah.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Dig out those old Christmas tree rope lights.
Right. And they're fine underground because they live outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting. All right. So could you name some perennial flowering plants you'd recommend for our area?
Well, I'd say blue poppies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of lilies. Jacob's ladder. I'm sure I'm missing some. Oh, primroses.
Primroses are great.
Primroses are great. They're hardy, and it's a top of the world plant. And they don't like blue poppies. They don't grow in California.
Mm-hmm.
So there's blue poppy envy.
Right.
So there's actually quite a few perennials. Globe flower is another one. They just about 2 or 3 feet tall, and these round
Beautiful
yellow flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't know or are not familiar with these flowers, as the summer progresses, look at people's yards. Say, hey, what is that? And then do you have a chunk or something? And the other perennial that people forget about as far as being beautiful is rhubarb.
Yeah. It's a great green and red plant.
Green and red plant, and there are places that it's actually grown as a landscape ornamental.
Lovely. I have a confession to make. If I ever have rhubarb growing in my yard, that will be its only purpose. I do not like rhubarb.
Because she doesn't like rhubarb, that's right. I still love you, Pam.
Well, thank you. I'm glad. But rhubarb is not my favorite. What is rhubarb? Is it a...
It's officially a vegetable.
Yeah, it's not my favorite veggie.
We just treat it like a fruit.
Well, as long as we're talking about flowers, we had a call in from Pat saying, how do you keep deer out of your flowers and garden?
Oh, yeah. Fence. Maybe your neighbors are feeding the deer and they're drawn in. I have people that pull me aside and they go, what do? My neighbor feeds the deer and I don't want them. You have to fence. That's all there is to it. You've got to keep the deer out.
So you're going to have to put a some kind of a fence around your beds or around your yard in general.
Right. Mm. That's just
kind
all
of
there
the
is
same
to
thing
it.
With rabbits.
Oh my, same thing.
I mean, right. They are the enemy of seedlings and all that nice little vegetable stuff that we're growing now. All right. So, how about another of Mike's questions? Is there, this is almost sacrilege, is there something you can grow to stop salmon berries from spreading? In other words, can you put something around the outside of a salmon berry patch that'll stop them from spreading?
I'll tell you what, our yard borders a hillside cliff of salmon berries.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a fence sort of buried down the ground, thinking that they're going to stop at that point. Well, I think salmonberries have brains. I do. Because I have raised beds that are set aside from this fence with landscape cloth at the base of them for that reason. And they will travel underground.
And still come up?
And still pop up.
Wow.
I go, what? So they will travel under the landscape cloth. And when they reach the other side, they send up a seedling. And I go, you've got to be kidding me.
Wow.
I mean, they travel. There was one bed we have. It's 6 feet wide. It's a triangle. They traveled all the way under that bed and popped up inside the lawn. So all bets are off. The only way you can stop a dandelion is to keep mowing them down or digging them up. But there's nothing that you can plant.
Salmonberry. Okay.
There's nothing you can plant to keep a salmonberry from finding its way into the world.
Hmm.
I mean, you have to keep clipping them at the base. And because all those salmonberry roots, they'll send up shoots.
Yeah. And they're tough.
They're tough.
Any of us who hike through them.
And so here's what happened to me with salmonberries is, almost 10 years ago, we built a greenhouse. And I thought, oh, how clever. I'm going to have just two raised beds, waist high, because I'm not getting any younger, fill them with chunky stuff and then top it off, right? All that. And I'm just going to put maybe two layers of landscape cloth in the bottom. And you know what? Those salmonberries found their way. They crawled, grew underground for about 8 feet and popped up. They must have found some micro hole in the landscape
cloth, or a seam
or a crack or something. And there they are. So I had to get rid of my raised beds because it was going to be in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be a constant battle. I said, okay, fine. You won. I took out all the dirt, and now I just have containers in there because this is their home. I mean, salmonberries, they don't understand fences and
No, they just grow and grow and grow.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately for Mike's questions, we have not had great answers. Buttercups?
Sorry. Yep.
Chemicals?
Or dig.
Catch them very early.
Or live with them.
Or salmon berries, not much will take them out. I mean, I used to live, same thing. I had a fence and a batch of salmon berries, and they just constantly came.
See, raspberries do the same thing.
Under the fence.
You know, people want to have a patch of raspberries, and which I totally understand because they do so well here, but they're going to go into your neighbor's lawn. They're going to go everywhere. They're going to go everywhere. I mean, That's what they do, you know. It's survival. That's what a plant. You got to think like a plant.
Just keep whacking them off when they're young,
right?
And that's about it,
right? And the former owner of where we live now, that's exactly what he did. He would just mow them down. Next time, just mow them down.
There's not much else.
It's how you want to spend your time, really.
Sure. All right. Well, we have the salmonberry and the buttercup answer. Might not be what you wanted to hear, but
it's kind of a reality check. It really is. Yeah.
All right. Here's somebody who is growing beets for the first time this year. Do you have any tips on beets?
So beets, you need to start them. You can start them indoors or you can directly sow them outdoors. So let's take two scenarios. So if you start them indoors, those little beet seeds, they look like meteorites. I mean, if you look at them under a microscope, they're really cool looking. They're just like little meteorites. And they're a fruit. So a beet seed is actually a fruit. And you will get maybe three seedlings popping out of that little fruit.
Okay.
So go ahead and start them, and they'll get about an inch tall, and you divide them out. You can transplant those. They'll do fine. If you're going to start them outdoors, wait a little while. Beets really like warm soil. If you can cover them for a while, great. They also like well-draining soil and, fluffy, good, enriched soil.
Mm.
And I know people cringe when I tell them this. They go, I just don't have that. But if you just add some fluff or compost or old manure. Then you kind of fluff it up like a sponge. So beets like space. So I would keep my beets about 6 inches apart, and they like sunshine warmth. So don't make a big crowded patch of beets. Let them have as much sun as possible in room, and you'll get beets. And you can grow them in a hoop house, too.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the biggest, beautiful, most beautiful beets I've ever seen have been in Heather Johnson's hoop house. Just amazing. Yeah.
Okay.
And don't forget to eat the greens.
Oh, yeah. Beet greens are good.
Beet greens.
Actually, I like the beet greens. I don't care for the beets much.
Oh, so you don't like rhubarb, but you eat beet greens. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a redeeming factor, Pam.
Good. Glad to know I've got a couple. All right. So, beets, lots of sun, warm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Lots of room.
Good amount of room. They don't like to be crowded.
Oh, you said something about beets that made me think of another question, and then I forgot.
The beet goes on. Beets are related to Swiss chard. So Swiss chard...
Maybe that's why I like the leaves.
It's just a beet top, really. Hmm. It's been, quote-unquote, developed or hybridized so that it's less of a bottom, as in the beet. It's more about the top.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
It's the same old. Yeah.
Didn't know that, and I love Swiss chard, so there you go. That's why I like the greens.
So grow Swiss chard, and which I think when you get bright lights or those varieties, which is the blend, so you have bright yellow and oranges and reds, and I could just lay on my belly with my camera and just take pictures of this stuff.
Well, yeah, they're beautiful ornamentally as well
they
as
are.
To eat.
Yeah.
And they seem to go, Swiss chard does fairly well in a greenhouse or a hoop house or outdoors.
Okay. I mean,
outdoors, does it get beat down by the rain?
If you don't cover it.
Okay, you have to cover it from the rain.
You have to cover it from the rain, and we have probably, maybe 8 raised beds outside.
Mm-hmm.
And we have actually started a few years ago leaving our little plastic PVC pipe hoops year-round on our raised beds. And so in the fall, you know, when everything's done, Marty and I apply, you know, feed the soil with some compost, mm-hmm. just top it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cover them up with plastic, and we put lath strip around the top of the raised beds, and we actually just kind of seal it in. And what that does, it prevents the soil from being leached out.
Yeah.
I mean, you work hard
right.
for good soil, right? Doesn't just rain from heaven, and so it prevents the winter rains from leaching all that out. It stays fluffy, and then you just open it up in the spring when you're planting, and then, you know, you close it down on a sunny day, you open it up and you close it up, and I just get those big giant 2-inch paper clips, you know, those big black ones,
right, the binder clips, yeah,
exactly. And so I buy them by the dozens, and they fit perfectly on those 3/4-inch PVC hoops. So I use that a lot.
Okay.
So for beets, you want to add a little warmth for beets, just cover up the beds for a little while.
Mm-hmm. All right. So there's your beet answer. And let's see. When should I plant onion bulbs and garlic?
Well, let's take garlic first. Garlic is usually planted in September-ish.
Okay.
In the fall. You don't have to cover it. Mine was uncovered all winter. So it's like a bulb. It's like a daffodil or a crocus. You plant them in the fall. The roots get established, and then they start growing in the spring. That's the best time. Onion sets or bulbs, anytime.
Anytime?
Anytime.
Winter?
Like, you know what I mean? Like anytime now.
Oh, anytime
yeah,
now.
Anytime
okay.
now. Like, so May, early June.
Okay.
And the one little secret about onions, like bulbing onions versus the little green spring onions.
Right.
Okay. So, and I learned this because I'd start my onions from seed, and I get a little seedling, and at the white on the bottom and the roots, and you get the green top. And I'd space them out in the garden about 4 inches apart, and then some would form bulbs and others would look like a big giant leek. I wouldn't get any bulbs. I'm going, now what am I doing wrong here? So I got on the horn and I called the onion expert in Fairbanks. I said, and I was out in the garden. I said, how come I get bulbs in some and not in others? And he said, if you plant your sets or your seedlings too deep, then you will not get a bulb.
Just
and so I looked around. He said, now describe what is in front of you. And I said, well, okay, that one looks like a giant leek. He says, I bet you don't see any white above, do you? I said, mm-mm. He said, it's too deep. And he learned it because he had a bunch of students that were working on his trial plots in Fairbanks.
Sure.
And he didn't tell them how deep or shallow to put them. And so it was mixed results. So when you transplant those seedlings or sets, you want to just barely have them underground. I mean, just put the roots underground and leave the rest on the top. Don't just bury it thinking you're securing it.
No.
Then you'll get onions.
That's kind of like kohlrabi, because when that grows, you're looking at that bulb coming up, kind of this weird little alien-looking
plant. It does.
Bulb coming up
out of
the
ground. And we think of onions as a root crop. Well, not really. It grows on the surface. It's just the roots are down there.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So don't plant your onions too deeply, and plant your garlic in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. We have time for a couple more questions. Actually, we can go as long as we want. So I have a whole bunch of questions here. We can, I don't know what your schedule is. We do have slugs, and actually I do have a question about that. Sluggo or not to sluggo?
To really use sluggo well, which, I mean, sluggo is essentially a little grain of like sand in the middle, if you will, or iron. And then it's covered with a very, what seems to be a lovely little attractant. And it's just like it's a vegetable matter. And I've actually watched a slug veer off course to go eat a chunk of sluggo.
Interesting.
It was interesting because it took me a while. It's like watching coconuts fall.
I was
going
to say, you must have had a lot of time on your hands that
I need
day.
To do a time lapse
yeah,
of that.
There
That'd
you go.
Be
That'd
great.
Be interesting.
And it's not supposed to hurt birds or, you know, they just eat it and you just... but you want to apply sluggo not in your garden if you can avoid it. Because you don't want to draw the slugs in.
To that.
You want to keep them out. So put it on, say, outside your raised beds along the edges. Maybe they're hanging out in the grass. But as far as keeping your garden slug-free, now Midge Short out in Antone's, she will actually grow a sacrificial plant in the beginning of a row. And she'll let the slugs just chew on that.
How do you keep them away from the rest of the plants, though?
Well, she'll pick them off the other plants, but she won't pick them off the sacrificial.
Okay.
She also knows that slugs do love Chinese cabbage and so on.
So she'll plant.
She'll plant. And I thought, oh, I've got slugs starting to show up in my broccoli leaves. And, a broccoli leaf fell on the ground and I picked it up and there's slugs underneath it. Well, I don't want to remove that broccoli leaf on the ground. I
just let it go.
I just want to use it as I lift it up, I harvest the slugs, and I put it back down. Because if I start peeling off the leaves that are on the ground or the ones that are low on the stem that have slugs on them or holes... they're just going to go up higher and find more food.
Right.
Because they are out feeding when we're sleeping or on a cloudy day.
So you're basically going out there and picking the slugs.
You have to get the breeding population out of there. And when I say breeding population is slugs don't need two. They just need one.
Right.
And you have to get out there. Every day, grab your cup of coffee, go for a slug patrol. All 5 minutes, that's it. Look everywhere and just pick them. Don't think that you're just going to go away like a salmon berry, really. They're there to eat.
Right. So the sluggo for you is just sort of what works maybe when you're at sleep?
Yes. It's a whole defensive deal. So okay. I pick slugs. I set traps for them, like pieces of wood on the ground. I lift up the wood, and oh, by golly, there they are. Especially on a sunny day. They're camped out there.
Yep. They like sluggo. That moist area.
Sometimes I will get essential oils mm-hmm. in a spray bottle with water, like mint or your cedar or your fir and type essential oils. I spray that. So, you know, you just use a... It's like eating. You're not going to eat Cheerios all your life. You're going to want a varied diet. I want to get a little varied defense system for slugs. Yeah.
Interesting.
And then the neon sign that says, don't
slugs
go here.
Here.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a big raised bed and a small greenhouse. I'm trying to figure out what to prioritize in the greenhouse besides tomatoes and cucumbers. For instance, what about beans? Do I put those in the greenhouse?
You can grow, yes, you can grow green beans. Like bush varieties are particularly good
mm-hmm.
in containers in your greenhouse. Or my friend Sandy has them in the raised bed and they just spill over.
So raised bed in the greenhouse or raised bed outside?
Raised bed or containers in the greenhouse.
Okay.
Green beans don't do really well
right.
outside here.
What about peas?
Peas outside.
Okay.
And you can do both. Inside okay. and outside, but peas do really well outside. Okay. And you could probably sow those, you know, I'm going, because it's been cool.
It has been a cool spring.
It has been a cool spring, and so I would probably wait on planting your pea seeds until maybe later this month.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let me do a station ID quickly. You're listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM and HD, and we're streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. And we're talking with Marion Owen, Master Gardener, answering your gardening questions. I have a few more questions for Marion to go through if she wants to
go through. Yeah, we can do that.
Mm-hmm. And you can give us a call at 486-3181 to get your questions answered, and we'll... do our best. I say we. Marion will do her best to answer your questions.
I was doing some calculating the other day and realized I've been writing my weekly garden column for 22 years.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot.
And it all started because I had questions. And I figured if I had gardening questions, then maybe somebody would benefit from that.
And for those of you that don't get the newspaper, Marion's referring to her gardening
Monday.
Column that's in Monday's newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So
and they posted on the Kodiak Daily Mirror.
On the website. Yeah,
on the website.
KodiakDailyMirror.com.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say something here. We're all so busy.
Mm-hmm.
We've got packed lives. We have many ticklers vying for our attention. Mm-hmm. And we go, at the end of the day, we go, oh, I just can't believe it. I have so much to do.
Yeah.
And I'm teaching myself how to play the harp. And there's this wonderful harp instructor in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
She's lovely. And she did this little informal talk about how to practice. And she said, if you just do 5 minutes a day, take your most difficult piece and just practice just even a few measures, 5 minutes a day. So it's like gardening. If all you have is 15 minutes, then just go out and do 15 minutes. And you'd be amazed in a week, you've got 15 minutes times 7. You got stuff done. You pick slugs, maybe you weeded a little bit. At the end of the day, you go, yeah, okay, I did check in on the garden. Mm-hmm. It's okay. So let's get back to the greenhouse thing, the priority.
Yes.
So,
yes
tomatoes for sure.
Yep.
Cucumbers for sure.
Okay.
Green beans. Some people have tried soybeans.
Huh.
To mixed results.
Sure.
For sure, some of your herbs, like basil.
Yep.
Sweet peas, those flowering, beautifully scented, national flower of the UK, sweet peas, you can grow inside a hoop house or a greenhouse. Fabulous. And you walk in there and you just be blown over by the scent.
Mm.
So don't just think about vegetables. You can have hanging baskets of kind of tender flowers. It'll just greet you as you walk in.
Kind of a nice, pleasant surprise.
Totally.
Now, kale does well just in a raised bed and seems to take over things. It's a good plant, but it also is so hardy.
It is so hardy, and it gets really sweet when it's so cold.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, the one vegetable that has topped kale as far as being the most nutritional vegetable you can eat is cress.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like watercress
like watercress and my favorite cress, which you can get in a variety of places now, it's called wrinkled, crinkled, crumpled cress. and it grows only about 5 inches tall.
Uh-huh.
It has a curly leaf, and it grows inside or outside, like inside a hoop or a greenhouse or outside.
Hmm.
And I eat it like a salad. We serve it in our dinner cruises. I just take cress and a little bit of fruit like strawberries or raspberries and just a little balsamic vinegar, and you've got the most wonderful little salad just like that. Mm. Easy peasy. Yep.
Nice. So
wrinkled, crinkled, crumpled cress. Yeah.
What a great name.
You can send me an email if you're curious about that one. Yeah. And I just sort of discovered it. Yeah.
So it has as much nutritional value as
more
kale.
Of kale.
And is probably not nearly as bitter as kale.
No, kale can be bitter. You know, you'll notice when you're buying kale over the winter from the local stores, it is tough.
Mm-hmm.
It is bitter. Well, where is it grown? It's grown in Southern California, and they're vying for water there. Our kale here is tender, sweet. You can eat it raw or cooked. And I remember years ago, Renee Shepherd, who lives in California of Shepherd's Garden Seeds, she came to visit me and we had a great time. And she was sampling our kale. And she said, I have never eaten such tender and flavorful kale as what I've had here in Kodiak. Huh. She says, I'm going to have to rethink how I write the backs of my seed packets, because they're so used to tough, bitter, strong kale.
Huh.
Because of where it's grown.
Because it doesn't have enough water.
It's a cool climate veg.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it does well here. Okay, so music for your plants or not?
Not punk rock.
Not punk rock.
No.
So plants have a discerning taste?
Is that a pun? That's really good. When I visited Elena White, who this is a few years ago, and where they start their seedlings.
For strawberry fields.
For strawberry fields out in the flats. And she has some music playing in the background. And let me just, I'm going to put a little plug for them, because maybe you don't realize it, but the idea or the prevalence of family-owned or even nurseries in the United States that start their own seedlings, it is a rarity now.
Yeah.
It used to be that wherever you went, little podunk town, USA,
started
you had your little
stuff.
Nursery.
Yeah.
Not anymore. It's, you know, big business. And so we are so blessed, you know, for them to be starting their own seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one little thing about music, and I'll just throw this out there, is everything is energy. Everything. There's energy behind everything.
Sure.
Sound, light, food, whatever. And so I think plants, a living thing, do respond to a certain energy or not. We might not sense it, but I think they do. I really do.
So
don't unload your whole day on your poor little plant, Pam.
Okay.
Be nice to
the plant.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll play nice music to the plant.
Yeah, right.
How about those dandelions?
What about them?
Well, do you weed them? Do you eat them? Do you let them grow? And what do you do? Let's just have a conversation about them, because thoughts have changed over the years about dandelions. When I was a kid, my grandmother and my great aunts did a lot of what they called picking a mess of greens.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would go out and pick greens every spring. They were wonderful. I mean, it was things like dandelions, but it was squirrel's tail and just wild greens right. along the farm roads when I was a kid, and they were delicious.
Right. The young greens.
Yes.
Yep. And, yes. and no different from for dandelions, the young greens.
Right.
And you know, Stacy Studebaker, she has classes about greens and wild mm-hmm. greens, same kind of thing. It's kind of your tolerance level.
Yeah.
For some people, having the perfect green lawn in America is the epitome of your symbol for, you know, being the number one gardener. But, you know, dandelions, my reasoning these days is as one of the first flowers to show up in the spring, it provides also the first food for early emerging bees mm-hmm. and syrphid flies or hoverflies. So bumblebees, which have been underground, the queen, for 7 months, that's some of the first things they get to eat. And if you really need to get rid of your dandelions, I say let them be yellow for a while, yellow and mellow for a while. Mm-hmm. And then before they go to seed, go ahead and mow them down or cut them down or whatever you need to do. Now, there is some talk about this pre-emergent cornmeal. Pre-emergent as in you apply this cornmeal over your lawn, and supposedly it's supposed to stop the emerging of
dandelions.
New dandelions. But if you have an established rosette down in your lawn, that's not going to stop squat. Yeah. It's the new stuff, and you need to apply it back in March or April. But so there's a tolerance thing. Me, I like them. I think they're beautiful. The bright yellow, what else is going on, right? Not much. So it's a tolerance thing. If you want to kill them, yes, there's herbicides and whatever to do it, or you can just dig them out or pour boiling, scalding, strong white vinegar on them. And mm-hmm. again, what do you want to spend your time doing?
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there's the dandelion question.
I mean,
question.
Maybe it's a little more, make dandelion wine if you want. Maybe that's a little too much philosophy, but you kind of have to think about, we all have 24 hours in a day. What are you going to do with it?
Well, yeah, pick your battles. But I do think that thoughts are changing a little bit around that because, again, going back to when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, we were picking the greens and mm-hmm. eating the greens. And then as I got older and Dad was worried about what the lawn looked like, we were out there with those stupid dandelion forks.
Right, yeah.
digging them out
one
as kids.
And two and
I hated
three.
Those things. Yeah. And, you know, and applying pesticides, mm-hmm. basically, to take out the dandelions. And now you hear more people talking about, well, let them be yellow for a while. Let the bees have their food. And by the time they're done, you maybe have your crocuses coming up in your lawn. And you
right.
may have other things. And you can get rid of them before they go to seed.
Mm-hmm.
The other concern I have heard, and being a hiker and loving wildflower fields, and this is a concern I've expressed before, too, is that they choke out the wildflowers
they do.
In the fields. And it kind of, over the years, it's broken my heart to see what's happened to Spruce Cape, which is now covered in dandelions.
I know. And I agree. I mean, I want to take what I would consider a photograph of a pristine wildflower meadow.
It's hard to find.
It's hard to find. You're going to have dandelions and what was the other one?
Buttercups.
Buttercups. And so wherever humans tread.
I know. It's in our shoes.
It's in our shoes.
Yeah.
It's in our pockets. We unload our pockets. We're the cause of it.
It's on our dog's feet.
It floats in
everywhere.
The air.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. Yeah. And yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's kind of a challenge.
So, I mean, the definition of a weed is just a plant in the wrong place. And that's all attitude, right? Yeah.
I could have been called a weed a few times. So. All right. How do I keep aphids at bay in my greenhouse? And what if whatever your idea is didn't work and I got them anyway? Then what do I do?
Okay, so let's say you do have aphids. You need to increase the air circulation in your hoop house.
Okay.
You have to have a fan going 24/7.
Huh. Okay.
You can't depend on the little vents opening up when it gets too hot or opening one window on one end and cracking the door on the other.
It's just not enough ventilation.
No, it's not. You have to have active air moving. The other thing is you need to be vigilant. You need to be in there every day with your cup of coffee. Look under the leaves at the point where the leaves meet the stem.
The stem.
You have to look. If you do have aphids, you can get some, like Dr. Bronner soap,
mm-hmm.
a little bit in a spray bottle of water. You can add a little essential oil, like a little bit of peppermint or citrus. They're a soft-bodied insect. They live to poke their little proboscis into the plant, and then they just sit there like at a feeding trough. They don't have to do anything.
They just sit there.
Because the vascular action of the plant just runs that liquid right through their body.
Mm.
They just sit there like at a feeding trough. But they're so soft-bodied that a little bit of soap or a little bit of acid, and they go,
and that's it.
But it's totally preventive here. So if you're buying a plant from some or gifted a plant, put it in quarantine before you bring it into your greenhouse or hoop house.
Or I would even say your house. You are, because I've had that happen to me where it's like, oh my gosh, what happened to all of my plants? And boom, there
right,
they
you've
are.
Got spider mites, you've got yeah. aphids,
yeah.
you've got...
So it's good to quarantine them in the garage or whatever you have to quarantine them in.
And if you do have a plant that has aphids, like maybe it's covered your basil, then how much do you really want that basil plant? Get it out of there. You pick your battle.
Yeah, because it will take
And
over.
After a while, you know, most people in this community who have hoop houses, there's probably 70 or 75 hoop houses now.
Wow.
Which
really?
Is amazing. Yes,
that is
because
amazing.
The Kenai Peninsula and Kodiak have the largest percentage, if you will, of hoop houses in the nation.
Per capita.
Per capita. When we took off with it, when that program started about 7 years ago.
Huh. And then that's not even counting the little raised bed hoops
right.
that everybody
mini
has
hoops.
In their yard. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
That's amazing. 75. That's cool.
It is cool.
So we already kind of talked about when to plant tulips and garlics and crocus and that sort of thing.
So what do you do when your, say, daffodils wilt? What do you do when they're,
I don't know.
When they're
what
done
do you
blooming?
Do,
I mean, they
I
look
put them in a jar on my kitchen table, but
yeah. So, well, there's another thing. So Mother's Day is coming. Right?
Yes.
So a clump of daffodils is lovely.
It is.
But don't mix your daffodils with other flowers.
Why?
Because daffodils don't play well in the sandbox with others.
Interesting.
They will actually exude this.
It's like the daffodil octopus, huh?
Yeah, they'll exude this compound that prevents, or actually kills off, causes other flowers to wilt.
Cut flowers.
Yeah, cut flowers to wilt.
Interesting.
So put them in their own little sandbox.
Well, that's why you see them always sold by themselves. I did not know that.
They're not usually mixed.
No.
And so for your daffodils out in the garden,
mm-hmm.
Let them die back. Don't cut the leaves.
Okay.
Let them die back. If you want to gently or loosely tie them off a little bit with some string, you know, and then plant annuals around them to cover up, that's great.
But they'll come back the next year.
They'll come back the next year.
Mm-hmm.
If, let's say, you have them in a container, or this is what I did, is over the winter, I planted daffodil bulbs in 5-gallon buckets.
Okay.
And I put them in my greenhouse. Well, lo and behold, I've got daffodils blooming in February.
Nice.
It's like this greeting, like greeters when you go into the greenhouse. You go,
that's
hello,
cool.
This is great. Well, they're dying back now. So what do? It's not fall. So I learned this from Lonnie White of Strawberry Fields. He says, go ahead and pull them out of the buckets when they're all wilted and just put them somewhere, you know, in your shed or somewhere where they not get all wet and cover them up. And they will continue to wilt. And lo and behold, by the end of summer, you'll have daffodil bulbs that are ready to plant.
Replant.
Right.
So you can put it back in your 5-gallon buckets in the greenhouse.
Or in the garden.
Or for wherever.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Good tip. All right. We talked about the best time to plant various vegetables in raised beds. Let's talk about container gardening just a little bit. You know, we talked about lettuce being a good container type thing. If you have just a deck, what are the kinds of things that you could grow? Let's say you don't have a yard. You maybe just have a little deck space. And so you've got a bazillion containers that you can put on your deck. What would you recommend growing for vegetables in your container garden?
I would do carrots like what you do. Mm-hmm. Lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You can do fava beans.
Fava beans, which is
a broad bean. just mixed greens for salad.
Okay.
Because mixed greens, which is like arugula and kale and some lettuce, and you can actually, when they get about 4 inches tall for eating, you can cut them, and they'll send out more shoots. And it's not going to do that all summer, but you can get what's called a cut and come again salad going.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you can replant
and,
as maybe later.
And don't
later.
Forget parsley.
Mm-hmm.
Parsley goes great in containers.
Okay.
And you have parsley all summer. So you can do a lot with just three, say, halibut tubs or three containers. And don't forget wonderful edibles like nasturtiums.
Mm-hmm.
Color, eat the flowers. We serve nasturtium blossoms with our dessert on the dinner cruises. So people, is this edible? Absolutely. You hold it up like an ice cream cone.
And they're tasty.
And you put a little whipped cream in there, a little chunk of cake, and it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's great. Okay. Real men eat nasturtiums.
All right, we'll have to ask Mike if he eats nasturtiums. All right, I have one more question. Did you have any questions that came your way that we haven't hit yet?
Well, you covered it with the cilantro, and then the question that I get this time of year is, how do I fill a raised bed? So I want a garden now, or we just moved. What do I do? So that was really it. It's chunky chunky
back
stuff.
Back to that organic material. Mm-hmm. You can get beech kelp. You can get
old manure.
You know what we haven't talked about? Chicken manure.
Okay.
Let's talk about chicken manure, because it's great, but it's very hot.
It's hot, as in not just temperature hot.
Right.
But it is off-the-chart high nitrogen, which is fine if you mix it up with some kelp, or if you just dilute it.
Okay.
Just dilute it. And speaking of dilution, you know, if you have a 5-gallon bucket to make a tea for watering your plants, you take a 5-gallon bucket, you take a handful of kelp or seaweed, and a handful of like old manure or a little patty, a cow patty. Take a chunk, dissolve it in the water and stir it, and it makes the best tea for watering your seedlings. Just dilute it and just like a tea color, and use that. Stir it occasionally and just add it to your watering can or whatever, and add that to your plants when you transplant your seedlings.
So you're fertilizing them as you go, basically,
right,
with this tea.
Right.
So does that need to sit for a few days, or is it pretty much ready to go once you stir it up?
It's good to kind of dissolve that little
chunk
and
chip.
And so stir it. Yeah, chip. Where the chips may fall. So just stir it. Some people say clockwise and counterclockwise. Just stir it. I stir mine twice a day.
Okay.
I walk by it and I go, oh, great. Okay, stir it. And then I just take a scoop and I add it to a watering can, and I use it for watering my hanging baskets.
Can you use that for houseplants?
You can. I would probably filter it, make sure there's nothing you want to introduce.
Into the
It'd be great if you just dilute it even more for houseplants.
Okay. Speaking of houseplants, here's a question I had. Sometimes you have houseplants and you get this little mold stuff going on around
kind
the
of white
outer
stuff.
Around the outer part of the pot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do about that?
Outside
or
inside?
Anything?
And sometimes you'll get a little crusty stuff on top of the soil or against the inside wall, too.
Inside wall is what I'm talking about, and on the soil.
It's usually salts.
From your water.
From your water, or if you use Miracle-Gro, which is basically salt.
Interesting.
It's a salt base. Not salt like table salt.
Right.
But it's, you know, your hydrogen, this is and that's your nitrates or nitrites and that kind of stuff. They're salts. And so by continued watering and so on, it's going to precipitate out. And that's why over time, if you use a chemical fertilizer like Miracle-Gro in your containers or out in your yard, you will eventually kill off the bacteria.
The good bacteria.
The good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is. It's just salt. So transplant it. Transplant your plant in a fresh
soil,
potting soil, and make sure you've got good drainage. Right.
So another question along those lines. When I was a kid, again,
I like to visualize you as a child. It's just endearing.
We used, and I still do this occasionally, I will take eggshells, crush them up into teeny, teeny, teeny little pieces, and coffee grounds. and put those on my plants.
Perfect.
Doesn't seem to hurt them.
No.
They seem to like it. And it's something I remember from when I was growing up that
it's,
we did
it's,
that.
It's so perfect. It's
good mix.
It's plant. It's a good mix. I mean, coffee grounds, it's just ground seeds, right?
Right, right.
So the next time you go get a latte, ask whatever barista you're working with. You know they're producing loads of coffee grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And say, do you ever save your grounds? And they'll say, yes, if we have a bucket. Take a bucket. Pick it up. It's just going
and
in the
use it
and
for
use
fertilizer.
It in your garden. Absolutely.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Good to know.
I mean, I even knew somebody down in Washington State that took burnt coffee beans, like you know, when they're roasting
the
coffee
were,
beans.
Yeah.
A little over-roasted.
Right.
And she sprinkled them in her trails, her paths around her garden. So every time she walked, she'd
smell coffee.
She'd get a little caffeine hit.
Oh,
right.
That's interesting. That's a little more than I want to do.
Oh, yeah.
But,
okay. Well, here's one thing that people are probably wondering about. For
okay.
this time of year, how to transplant seedlings, whether you buy them from a nursery.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
or
one.
Or if you're growing them yourself. So you want to, it's a term, hardening off. You want to get them adjusted to the great outdoors, to the real sunlight, the real wind, the real rain, whatever. Slowly, over the course of a week. So you take your tray of seedlings outside for a few hours out of the direct sun, and then you bring them back inside, and you will have very strong, healthy seedlings that will handle the great outdoors much better than if you just go, wow, it's a sunny day, let's go to the nursery, I'm so inspired, and you grab your seedlings and you put them outside and
right.
you go, I don't know why they're wilting. Well, I would wilt if I didn't wear sun protection or pre-tan before I went to Mexico.
I have a question for you, kind of along those lines. I live in a wind tunnel. And it gets a fair amount of sun in the morning. Sun's usually gone in my section of the yard by probably by 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
It's, the shade has taken over. But it is seriously windy, seriously windy. I don't. It can be a calm day anywhere else, and I have wind going through there because it's right off the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of learning that tall plants are not my friend. If I'm looking for flowering plants, they have to be relatively short flowering plants. Primroses seem to be doing okay.
Right.
Those geraniums that are low bed type stuff. Any other recommendations for those of us who live in the particularly windy areas?
It's a very good question because we live
you have
in
a
very windy spot too.
Yeah.
And I just know that when a nor'easter churns up, it's not a place for tall plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I have just learned where the little microclimates in the lee are for plants that just don't tolerate wind. Unless I want to there we go. Spend more time staking, supporting.
Right.
You know, and if you look carefully when the hanging baskets go up around town, you know, those plants are selected to handle wind and rain and so on. And so there's a lesson right there of the anatomy of a hanging basket. Because, and so I'm sure where you are, there are lees, as in, you know,
yeah, out of the
leeward
spots. Yeah.
And so, yes, it might not get the morning sun. It might just get the afternoon sun, but just grow plants that can tolerate that kind of daylight, and they'll be out of the wind, period. Well, I mean, why would you want to put something on purpose in the...
Well,
it's hard.
Yeah, I moved to this place.
Do you get westerlies there?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, and those can be cold.
Yeah.
And we had southerlies for 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
And they are really cold. I have a friend who lives in Hawaii. I said, now look, southerly, can't you send us some warmth? What's the deal here? But they're cold. They're cold and they're cool. I mean, cool rain.
And it's been chilly.
And so I go, those poor plants are getting beat up. So I've had to actually move my containers to the other side of the house, and I go, okay, it's not going to be forever.
I have some potted shrubs and small trees, actually, and I've done that, too. I moved them all to the where they're completely out of the wind, and
that's the mantra of gardening. You're either moving plants.
I will look at you when I drive up.
Oh, there you go. You're either moving plants or you're moving dirt.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's good. All right. We have another question that came in. Any recommendations on growing an avocado tree? Leaves fall off and the plants die after a few years. Avo Group needs your help.
Oh, yeah. Oh. avocados that, say, thrive in Hawaii, San Diego, and so on. In our house, which is so dry, it's a desert. Mm-hmm. And so they are suffering more often than not from too dry of air. And they're also, they really like for being inside, they need probably richer soil mm-hmm. than what you've given them. So if they've been in a pot for 15 years, they're starving. And so people, oh, there's a great book for the avocado people or want to grow an apple or a citrus plant. It's called the After Dinner Gardening Book.
I love that
book. The After Dinner Gardening Book. And it's hilarious.
It is.
What
was the name of his avocado plant? The thing that started the whole thing. Do you remember?
There is
that
a name for it. And he said, after a while, I'm either going to have to lower the floor.
Do you think that's even in print anymore?
It is, because I actually have a used copy. Richard Langer wrote it.
Yep.
And it talks about how he was able to grow that avocado plant. Do you think you're going to get avocados? I've never heard of anybody.
No, but it's a
avocados.
Nice green. I mean, they're
it's a lovely
plant.
It's a lovely,
plant.
Stately yeah. plant, right? So, yeah. Don't give up. But the environment in our homes and offices are just way too dry.
So it probably needs richer soil, maybe a larger pot, and regular misting.
And misting, yeah. Just, I mean, it should be almost a daily.
Well, let me ask you about this too, because. Somewhere, and I don't remember where now, I've read that seeds are different than they used to be, that they've done so many different hybridizations and different things with seeds that it's harder to germinate a regular old avocado seed. True? Not true?
Don't know. As far as an avocado
goes. Yeah, I wish I could remember where I read that.
But you brought up a good point. So, gone are the days when you were a little child.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. When you could just go to the grocery store and buy potatoes.
Oh, that you could plant.
And plant them. Mm-hmm. Because what is it about potatoes? Do you see little shoots coming up in the...
Not
you don't.
As often.
They're treated.
In my cupboard, occasionally they do, because they've been there a long time.
Yeah.
Really long time.
We can
time.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Well.
So, so your potatoes in the store are treated with an anti-sprouting. One of the most treated plants that you buy are potatoes, by the way. Mm. And I know that from a potato grower in Idaho. So here's potatoes. So if you want to grow potatoes, buy seed potatoes. And there's places around town that have them from Faith Farms and so on. I mean,
sure.
It's great. Cost Savers even has them. So you want to chit your potatoes. It's a word I can say on the radio.
I know.
C-H-I-T.
So I have always cut them.
You can cut them.
But what are you saying you should do with them?
Let
what
them
is
sprout.
Chitting? Oh, let them sprout. Okay.
Yeah. And it's something I learned from a very old gardening book from England. And they actually have chitting trays. You know, like our egg trays that we have from the canneries?
Yep.
They will lay out and actually stack them. Or, in your case, under your kitchen counter or sink, yeah. So allow them to sprout, mm-hmm. and then that's what you want to plant. It's just it can only be just a couple inches. Yes, you can cut your potatoes in halves or, you know, I don't usually go much more than a half. Huh. Maybe thirds if it's a big spud. But I like to save from the previous year the little potatoes, which I call drop-ins. And the folks in Palmer call them they're just drop-ins. You don't have to cut them or anything. But letting them pre-sprout, it's all fine. It's great.
Good.
It helps them a lot. And then you know when there's a rose end and then a not-so-rose end. And yeah, so you want to make sure you've got
the right end up.
But yeah, they'll figure it out. Plants, they're so much smarter than I am, I tell you.
So for the avocado trees and those kinds of trees that are used to a much airier and moister climate.
Moister climate.
Then a friend of mine I have a ficus tree that actually does fairly well in my house. Do you call that a tree? Is that
a tree?
It
is. Yeah,
okay.
It is. Yeah, so it's a fig.
A fig. So I have one of those, and a friend of mine has a gardenia but it requires a lot of misting. And it's big. It's huge. It's beautiful. Big.
Yeah. What do you smell when you go to Hawaii? Yeah. Gardenia. It's tropical. It's, 105% humidity.
So you spray the heck out of it. What about poinsettias? Do those need that kind of moisture?
Practically. If you want to carry over your poinsettia, those red, quote-unquote, flowers. They're not flowers. They're bracts.
Right.
And it's a leaf of a different color. So, yeah, they also grow wild. I remember I was doing a photo shoot in Costa Rica. And, places like that, it's houseplants gone wild.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole front of this house was just covered with poinsettias. I went, that's cool. But I also understand that if I want to grow something like that in my house, Christmas cactus is a classic example. Why Christmas cactus or even called cactus is tough on them because these plants live in the notches of trees in the tropics.
And they need water.
They need water. Mm-hmm. They're succulents, for goodness sakes. They're not cactus.
I have one that I keep looking at and I keep thinking, I've made the mistake of transplanting a Christmas cactus into too large of a pot.
What happened?
It died.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't
It was too much.
Because they really like, and maybe I never thought about where they grow, but they do. They grow in the
little notches.
Notches of a tree. So they like to be squishy and tight in their pot. And I have this little pot with this huge cactus in it. And I keep looking at it and I'm thinking, there is not a lot of soil left in that, but I'm terrified to take that thing out of that pot because I'm afraid I'll kill it. So it's like, well, sprinkle a little soil on top and see how you do,
Yeah.
I'll just keep it in that pot until it's dying.
Yeah, well, and you just got to, think like a plant. So if you realize that Christmas cactus or grow in the tropics and they don't have much soil and it's just sitting on top of a branch between the branch and the...
Yeah, it doesn't need a whole lot.
They don't need all that, and they're lost in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I learned my lesson the hard way with that one. So, let's see. All right. I tell you what. We're going to play a gardening song or two and see if Marion thinks of anything while we're playing that to talk about. And you have a few more minutes to call in to 486-3181 with your gardening questions. And I'll check my email quickly and see if anybody has emailed us. So let's listen to a gardening song. Give Marion a break from talking here for a minute. And we'll be right back.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch, row by row, someone blessed these seeds I sowed. Someone warmed them from below till the rains come tumbling down. Pulling weeds, picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones. Feel the need to grow my own, cause the time is close at hand. And grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. And tune my body and my brain to the music from the land. By inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch, row by row, someone blessed these seeds I sowed.
one warm them from below till the rains come tumbling down. Plant your rows straight and long, and temper them with prayer and song. And Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. An old crow watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. And in my garden I'm as free as that feather thief up there. Up there, and inch by inch, row by row, gonna make the garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below. Till the rains come tumbling down.
Wow. We had like a little flood of calls. That's great.
Yeah.
So I realized I had a text while we were talking about orchids. And I think he was talking about... orchids that you grow in a pot, basically.
Yeah, so let's talk about orchids, wild and domestic. So we have, I think Stacy said, about a dozen or so wild orchids around
right,
here.
Right.
And I can, if I can be strong here, is that do not dig up an orchid and think that it's going to be fine in your yard.
No, it will not.
No, it will not. I mean, the relationship that orchids have with their environment, all plants actually, but orchids in particular, is so specific to what's growing around them, what is in the soil, the nutrients. It's like digging up the lupin, the wild lupin, and trying to transplant it in your soil. It won't go. It's very, very, very specific. There's a reason why they grow there. So do not dig up the bog orchids or any orchids and try and transplant them in your yard.
Yeah, and it's...
Or even pick them for a bouquet.
Right.
I mean, you could be killing off that whole field just by doing a little picking, because their whole survival thing is, we don't understand.
Well, and they are so susceptible to change that, you know...
Yeah, like cattle grazing and all of that.
Yeah, so...
That's another thing.
So for wild orchids,
admire
them where they are.
Yeah, just take a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as the domestic ones, it's an art.
It truly is.
It's an art, like bonsai. It's an art to grow orchids indoors. It takes a lot of specific soil or not soil care, warmth.
Light.
Light.
All kinds of things.
And not all orchids are created equal.
That's true. And I know now this is just the expert that I know here in town is Sally Magnuson, is like the orchid guru for growing orchids in your house.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, Marian, you don't grow orchids, I don't Mm-mm. believe. So I would say get in touch with Sally.
And, that's what I would do. And in my house, I have one kind of indoor plant, and it's a corn lily, because it will just take abuse.
You spend your time outdoors.
I do have corn lilies. Yep.
All right. Well, let's go to a couple of these other questions, because Marian's got to run here. So which one do you want to take first?
Okay. So here's one. Redwood tree branch. She's been caring for. Probably came from California, like the redwoods or something. Yep, in Northern California. And it's grown roots, and she thinks it's ready to be transplanted in a pot. So if it was me, I would Google redwood tree growing conditions or something and find out if they need very acidic soil, which they probably do because it's, in those kind of forest environments, what kind of exposure. So you probably want to keep it out of the cold northwest or westerly winds. If you are going to grow it in a container, know that it might not survive the winter if it's really cold, cold roots. So that's what I would suggest.
Well, that brings me to those of us who do container gardens, container trees, shrubs, etc. You know, they don't do well above ground often because it is so cold.
Or long term
pots. Yes.
So
yes.
You can grow. I mean, there are people that grow rhubarb in a halibut tub, and it might work great for a couple, 3 years. But have you ever seen a commercial rhubarb root? There are enormous. Marty, when he was growing up, he would help these growers lift the roots out of the ground and put them in a greenhouse so they'd have the jump start on the rhubarb in the store. And he said they'd be like 6 feet long.
Wow.
These are massive.
So they don't do well contained.
Not after a while.
Yeah.
So if you're growing a tree in a container outside or a shrub, consider also maybe moving it to a better place over the winter.
Yeah.
Or collecting them together so they have this mass.
Yep.
Yeah.
They do better that way.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our next series of questions there?
Any growing tips for apple trees? Apple trees sometimes do really well. The past few years, we've had warm summers. We do get apples. Crab apples are great. So get a crab. Get a crab apple. They do very well, and I know that the local nurseries carry them. There are people that have great success with apple trees in hoop houses. John and Christy out by Yuzinki. I just was there last weekend, and they've got rows of apple seedlings, and they bring them in occasionally for sale. Let's see if I get this right. So growing them in a hoop house, you need to have them exposed to the cold, and then you can take the skin off, the plastic off the hoop house, and then replace it so that the flowers are protected and get pollinated. They're protected from the driving wind and the rain. So they're in a space. You need to open up your hoop house and let them get pollinated by the bees.
By the bees.
Right.
Sure.
So just know that, yes, they grow wild or they grow really well in, say, Yakima, Washington, or, the East Coast, but they have very cold winters, but they also have much warmer summers. Yeah.
So crab apples do well. I know a couple of people that have them in their yards.
And apple trees do great in Anchorage and Fairbanks and all of that. Again, they have cold winters, but they have much more milder summers.
Right.
What kind of fertilizer and how do you keep the birds away from your apple trees? What kind of fertilizer? I'm totally organic type. It's so easy to kill a plant with too much fertilizer love. Yeah. Keep the birds away. Well, if you're growing, blueberry farmers, for example, they have to net over all of their crops.
So that they
And
keep
so
them away.
If your birds are getting at your little crab apples, stay aware. Or maybe you need to pick them a little earlier. There's nothing finer than crab apple jelly. I tell you, it's beautiful and very flavorful. So give it a try. Get a dwarf or semi-dwarf. Maybe get five varieties on a good rootstock and have a good time. Learn how to prune.
Okay.
Any plans to keep away hornets? Not so much keep them away, but if you do have hornets or you do have wasps, try and figure out where their nest is and get rid of the nest. I mean, we have yellow jackets that come over to our fence and scrape. They're chewing the wood off.
Interesting.
To take to their nest to make their paper wasp nest. It's amazing. But they're just doing their survival thing. It's time to make a home. So, but also hornets and yellow jackets and all of that, they're very valuable pollinators. They might be connected to a very specific plant. So, I know.
But if you have little kids.
If you have little kids, it is a little bit of an inconvenience.
Have them in your yard.
Or B&B guests, you know. We find the nest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of the nest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
As in get rid of the nest. Well, Marion, I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking about all the things that grow in your garden and how to help other people grow different things. It's interesting watching the vegetation movement where everybody wants to grow their vegetables and their fruits and more than just flowers.
Oh, yeah. It's for me, it's like having money in the bank. It's like taking a little bit of power. Not a little bit. It's like being empowered to be able to grow even just a halibut tub of greens.
Sure.
It's so satisfying, and plants don't even care if you have a bad hair day.
Maybe we'll have you back another time where we can talk about what you do with that bountiful garden so that you can keep some of it over the winter and you can continue to have some of that. So maybe that's a topic for another show.
Multiple crops. Yeah,
yeah, multiple crops, preserving.
Preserving,
you know,
drying, pickling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That'd be an interesting topic someday.
I could share recipes too. Easy recipes
to
eat kale.
We'll do that. We'll have you come back and we'll talk about that again.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Marion. We're going to go out with some music and Mitch will be here. I think it'll be Mitch with the new news coming up.